I work in a bus company. I also am the anti-terrorist disaster mobility coordinator through my company, through FEMA. If you actually get to make it to an evacuation site, which is laughable in itself, I consider them body bag pickup points. They will take or confiscate the vehicles and bus you guys across, even on a closed bridge. Over.
Incredible. But when you think about evacuating, which I mentioned before, something like New York City, almost the effort sounds ludicrous. I know they do it to show that they're proactive and they're trying to give some semblance of order to people. It's just like the guys when they're in the subway with the M16s and stuff. You know, what do they think? They're showing, force. They're showing that they're there. But can they prevent anything? Not usually. So, a lot of attention needs to be done, and a lot more development of evacuation plans. They've never used them, so I don't think they're going to work well when they first attempt it. Okay, I believe, Jim, in Canada, I believe that was you in there. Pick it up, sir. This is KC2WGB, Limark TechNet.
Okay, great. VC3JIW to the north of Toronto. And remember, it's not fast, and it has to be. The environment would have to be above freezing for a clean plastic sheet to spread out over even a hole in the ground. A pot in the middle of the sheet, lower than the sheet, and a pebble at the center of the sheet. So any condensation in the sheet drips down to where the pebble is and drips into the pot. It will give you drinking water. It's very slow distillation. It won't work below freezing, but it's a way to get clean drinking water in small volumes. I'm not sure. I think you can get enough water to survive. Plastic sheet in a hole over the ground. Assuming gravity's slightly damp. You can get it out of water. You can put something over water in a bathtub and collect the water that's essentially pure water condensed. I'm not entirely sure if when water evaporates it takes chemicals with it or if it's just the water that evaporates, but I'll turn it back to net control and listen along.
Very good information, Jim. Yes, they also have little kits that have that plastic in a pail that they use on sailboats and other vessels at sea, and it does produce water enough for one person, maybe two, in a day. So, yeah, that is something that works. And close to the ground, it would even be better because you have the moisture from the ground, and it will give you distilled water. The only thing you can't do is safely drink rainwater because of our acid rain and other issues like that, especially in New York. We have our rain here is really pretty dirty when it comes down. Unless it's raining for hours, we don't really have clean water when it rains. You may have a comment on that, Jim. Back to you. KC2WGB, Limark TechNet.
We get the same rain you get. Cadmium and other heavy metals in the rain water. But you will be surprised. If you have to carry in your own drinking water, which we do for the vacation property, and we emptied this, Saturday noon to Sunday afternoon, so no Sunday dinner, made tea, had breakfast. This water was tea and drinking. Maybe we rinsing vegetables uses a huge amount of water, but we went through 2 gallons, 2.5 gallons of that had nothing to do with washing dishes or rinsing a cup. So, yeah, the volume of water use, if you have to carry it, you become very much aware of how much you go through.
Yes, Jim, you're absolutely right. Anyone who's gone camping in any way, roughing it camping, not the motorhome style, would realize that. And there's not too many people that do that any longer. So, that is great information. Okay, I think I've gone through everybody in the TechNet, except, let's see, no, Vito is out there. Vito, if you're still there, please pick it up. I'm sorry I passed you. KC2WGB.
common food. Yes, what about the common food?
Okay, I guess Vito's not out there. Rich, UPS, pick it up, sir.
Okay, John, good evening. Just a comment on the food storage and whether some people say you should have 2 weeks or 3 days or a month. It's not necessary to get the food, box it up, and put it away, and then if you don't use it in a year, while it would be a nice gesture to donate it, some people don't have the money to do that. What we do in my house is I have a pretty good, well-stocked pantry, and let's take, for instance, soup. Instead of just having one or two cans of soup, I might have 20 or 25 cans of soup on the shelf. When I want to have it one night this week, I'll go in, I'll take a can of soup. I'll mark it off on the refrigerator list to go shopping, and I'll buy another can and put that behind all the others. So I'm constantly updating it so it doesn't expire, and it works pretty well. The MREs are a nice way to go, but and if you do a Google search online, you can find a bunch of places that sell them at a pretty decent price. But the quality of them and the flavor runs the gamut from surprisingly good to unbelievably bad. And you probably want to either read the reviews or talk to someone like Rich, who was on before, and get a firsthand review on which ones are more palatable before you place your order. John, back to you.
KVQ, CMP, what a comment. CMP recognized. You know, Rich, it's a great idea. I would wonder, talking to the military people, I know they get a generic package. I don't know if the manufacturer of that MRE is listed, but it would be great to find out which ones they like and which ones they enjoy and eat the most. And that's what I would like to stock. You know, besides cake and the sundries, some of the good nutrition food would be good to have. Great information, Rich. I'm picking up the news station. Pick it up, sir.
Yeah, John, actually, the easiest way to get a good stockpile of food for as much as 3 years is the ShopRite can sale. When you get three for a dollar of all your favorite foods, $50 will give you 30 to 40 to 60 days of eating out of a can, if that's the way you want to eat. But that'll give you good food. And if you have a closet, that's the way to do it. $50, you can fill up a closet. It's not a problem. Not counting water, of course. But that's the easiest way to do it. That includes Chef Boyardee for three for a dollar and everything else down the line, tuna fish and vegetables and soups. It's not hard to do. You know, if you talk about emergency food, and that's the equivalent of what an MRE would be, you just have to figure out a way to heat it up.
Yeah, that is another way to go. The only thing I know, certain foods like tomato paste and the tomato products are high in acid, and they do devour the can, actually. I've had it happen on quite a few occasions. So you have to be careful of what you store. But you're absolutely right. You can buy canned fruits and canned vegetables, a little high in sodium, but you can select low-sodium cans. And you put those in a closet, like you said, $50, $60, you can have more than a sufficient supply for a week, I believe, and you will be eating nutritious food. So that is a way to go. Anybody out there with other opinions? Please chime in. This is KZ2WGP, Limehart Tech Man.
Hey, WB2U, do I have a good enough signal?
CH Warwick.
WB2U, your signal's fine. If you could just give me your name and your full call sign.
Sure. Name here is Paul, and the call sign is Whiskey Victor 2 Uniform.
Whiskey Victor 2 Uniform. Okay, Paul, your comments, sir? KC2WGB.
My son volunteered and was working for the Red Cross down at Cedar Creek, and he managed to bring home a couple of the MREs that the Red Cross distributes. And those were terrific because they also include a package to actually heat the meal. So you just put the food packet in this bigger packet, add water to it, and there's a chemical reaction that occurs that really heats up the food, so it's plenty of...
Well, Paul, that sounds like good information, and it's fairly attractive. Now, my experience with C rations and those horrible K rations, I mean, they keep you alive, but they weren't very appetizing. I don't know if you're familiar with those. They're many years ago.
Yes, Condon.
Condon, go ahead. Name and call letters, please.
That's Flanagan, John, if you was. Just another thing for people who didn't have any storage, I was recommending this, because we ran out of coolers, like, really quick. Your washing machine, you can use it as a cooler. You just throw some ice in it, throw whatever you want to hold in it, the door.
Absolutely, another good, great idea. Also, newsprint. If you took a tabloid like the Daily News, you would be surprised if you were to take a bottle of cold water and wrap it in newsprint, the first two layers wrinkled, and then just wrap it up. You would be surprised how many hours that will stay cool. And using a washing machine, if you had a little ice, throw it in there. Excellent, excellent idea. I never thought of that. But that's a good one, Glenn. Back to you for any comment.
Yeah, and it just drains out, so you don't even have to clean it out.
Comment?
All right, comment. Call sign and name, please.
KD2AOC. The comment is, why go with the MREs when they're no good for you and not go with something else that might be better for you? There's a lot of things out there, LDS, cans, oats, and peaches, and grains, and everything else. The MREs are no good because they're full of salt. You only need a certain amount of salt. You don't need a whole bunch. Go with something else.
KB2IQN with a comment on that subject.
IQN, your name, sir?
Good evening, Glenn. My name's Chris. I'm the harmonic of K2RIW. My comment is this. I happen to like getting protein bars from the supermarket. You don't even have to get them online, although I like to buy them online sometimes. They can be low sodium. They can be low sugar. That's really mostly why I get them. The only downside is they require to drink a lot of water with them, otherwise you can get bound up, let's say. And the other suggestion I have is to collect rainwater for the toilet, because if I live in an area where I'm on a well pump, and when the power goes out, there is no water. So collecting rainwater for the toilet is essential, because that extends the lifetime of the water that you have stored for drinking. Back to you, Glenn.
There are some very good recommendations there. Yes, rainwater. In fact, there are homes that I know of that have a cistern and roof drains go into that, and they use that for the washing machine and the toilet. Many countries have, especially island countries, have half and half salt and fresh water, like Bermuda, for shower and toilet. And, of course, drinking water is from the cistern that's under the building. So, yeah, those are great recommendations. And this is what I mean about we're learning more, we're getting smarter, and we should be able to do a better job next time. But, you know, you look at the government and you look at all of these agencies, there's nothing like people helping people, and that's what I believe really does the job. Anybody else out there with any comments? It's KC2WGB, Landmark TechNet.
DTS with a comment.
Comment, call sign and name, please.
KD2DBS, Richie.
Go ahead, Richie.
The MREs are calculated for 2,500 test persons per day. That's two MREs per person. Any chest fattening and everything else, at a point in time, you just want the nutrients and calories to keep you going. Other than that, you have a choice between what to call an A-pack. You can look for an A-pack, which is pretty dang, or you can have the Sure-pack, which they've been handing out down here in Master Beach. either way, those ones are pretty darn good. They also, every one of them comes with the heater that you add a drop or two of water in it, and it really heats the food up. But just watch hydrogen, and hydrogen explodes. Back to you.
Yes, hydrogen is very dangerous. And yeah, that is a good warning. It seems to be, I'm getting the impression that we need a broad spectrum, maybe some MREs, a lot of canned food, and low-sodium canned food. And you're right about the MREs with the high sodium content, but it seems to be, in an emergency, if you had to take it for 3 or 4 days, you know, it will keep you alive. Water is a precious commodity, something that we don't have much of in America. We're starting to have problems with that. So, you know, storing the water, whether you buy bottled water, put it aside, it doesn't really go bad. You try to get it in the right plastic container that doesn't leach some of the chemicals. There's so much to learn to be prepared. And anybody with any military training really has been bivouacking out there and taking some rough shots. So they would be the people that could advise us even more so on survival under these extreme conditions that we experienced during Sandy. Okay, is there anyone else out there with any comments? This is the Limart TechNet. My name is John. This is KC2WGB.
This is KC2QBEC Yankee Whiskey. Name is Joe in the mobile.
Yankee Whiskey, go ahead. I think you said the name was Joe.
Yeah, roger that, roger that. Yes, I guess I have a question about survival and the food and everything. What about weapons? I'm not sure if you guys mentioned any of having weapons on you, like maybe a pepper spray or a stun gun or something like that. You know, just in case, you know, you get some people who want to, like, maybe steal your food or something like that, you know? Back to the net.
Okay, Joe, good point. More than likely, pepper spray and noisemakers would suffice for animal problems because you are going to have raccoons and other animals, some places bears, that are going to want your food also, especially during a flood when what they normally eat is not available. So that is a good point. Now, as far as weapons and trying to protect yourself against people, that is a very difficult subject. Even good people do some terrible things and make some very bad calls when they're stressed. And, you know, it's like a guy getting shot stealing food to feed his family. He's not stealing money. Is it right to do that? Boy, there's some tough calls out there. You got to be very careful with weapons and how they're used. But I agree with you. You should have something to deter animals from trying to get to your property or break into your house. Pepper spray would be great. They have one that's made for bears, which is extremely strong, and that will retard anything attacking you. As far as I know people who use it, works very well. KC2WGB. Back to you, Joe.
Yeah, roger that. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point with the animals and whatnot, and that's funny that you mentioned the bear pepper spray. That's what I have in my car. You know, for not really for people though, but for animals and whatnot. Because you never know, you know. And I guess I can use it for people too. You know, who knows, right? But yeah, so that's a good thing to look into. And yeah, thank you. Back to you.
And Joe, as far as I know, I know in the city of New York, stun guns are illegal. They're frowned upon. So if you have one, you know, keep it under the hood so nobody knows. But they are very effective, and they work extremely well. But you must be prepared for almost anything in a disaster because people, like I said, they do strange things. But great thoughts. KC2 WGB. Anybody else out there?
wanted to open up a discussion generally. You know, we hear a lot about generators and runtime. We were talking about it before, actually. And if most people look into it, you know, between refrigerators, heat, and everything else, if they could get 6 hours out of their generator out of the day, it'll provide them with all the electricity that they need. I mean, not all the creature comforts, mind you. We do understand that. But it will give them heat, it will give them refrigeration and everything else. I know during this storm, you know, after several days, the previous storm, Irene, I was out for 9 days, and then the blackout, 4 days like that. I know that I'm able to run my generator for 6 hours a day. It will give me everything that I need to do, and I can keep it down to about 3 to 4 gallons for an 8-kilowatt generator for the day. If fuel consumption is our concern, that's something to think about as well.
Well, there again, you're absolutely right, and Dick has mentioned that several times. You need survival skills, and when you're worried about survival, you got to stop worrying about running your air conditioner or running this and that. You run the minimum to allow you to live in a way that you can exist. You want to be warm, so usually 2 kW would run the average house. The refrigerator, like you say, if you run it for 4 hours, and you're not opening the door every 10 minutes, that's no problem. That food is going to stay there. So I think you got a good system going and some good ideas there. And that's what we have to get out on this net, this information disseminated to the people, so they have an idea of basically what they need to prepare. And they have to start making notes now on what their experience was, so that when it comes time, maybe in the summer, whenever they're going to make these changes, they have the information they need to make good decisions. Okay, there was another station there with a comment. This is KC2 WGB. My name is John. This is Limark TechNet.
Good evening, John. Name here is Dave, Delta Alpha Victor Easy. We're up here in Warwick, New York, about 48 miles north of New York, northwest of New York City. As well, you know, the MREs have come. We've come a long way from hot tack and water and crackers and cheese, that's for sure. The old staples of the military. I don't know how the soldiers ever survived that stuff. Over.
Well, the C rations weren't too bad. The K rations were absolutely horrible. But they did have one amazing thing. They had a canned date nut loaf, which was delicious. That was great stuff. But yeah, they have come a long way. And I think people would be wise if they considered storing some of that between canned food and MREs. They can get through. And, you know, things like tea, coffee, if it's in the can, it's not going to go bad. And you can always find a way to build a fire and warm your food, or if you have that package that has a hydrogen generator in there, you know, it'll work for you. But there's a lot of interesting things out there, and people have to be aware of it. So thanks for that information. KC2WGB.
Very good. N2TEH returning. Yeah. Well, one more thing unrelated to this. I believe I may have more contact on 223-400 today. I was out in the Berkshires in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. I worked the mobile station in Suffolk, New Jersey from Stockbridge, Mass. On 223-400 Simplex FM today. Over.
Wow, that was a good shot. How was the copy and how long was the QSO?
Copy was 80%, and the QSO lasted until I got into the heart of the Berkshires, in which I lost the station. It was 400 feet up, but that's probably not, because those mountains up in the Berkshires are huge. And I started working them. I was in Poughkeepsie, and I kept them from Pleasant Valley all the way up to Stockbridge, Mass. On Simplex. I think it must be one of the longest QSOs, Simplex QSOs ever done on 223 Simplex. Over.
And what type of rig were you using? KC2WGB.
It was a Jetstream, a Jetstream 222 radio, and the antenna was a 5/8 diamond mag mount on the roof of my truck. Over.
Well, that's a good shot, and makes you wonder. You know, sometimes you can do that, You know, RF propagation is just so weird. Something you think is not going to work or you won't be able to do it, and in one day, it just, everything gets turned upside down and works perfectly. That has to do with antenna designs and a lot of RF communication. And sometimes there's no logical sense of why it works, but when the propagation is right, you can achieve wonderful things. Back to you, Nick.
Very good. I think I'll make this my final one, and we'll let you pick it back, pick up the net. Yeah, it was, and oddly enough, it was mobile to mobile simplex. He wasn't fixed. He was fixed, but he was in his, using a mobile antenna on the bumper of his vehicle. And both directional antennas, too. No directional antennas. And I'll tell you, 222's got some very strange characteristics, unlike 2 meters and 440. In that I was up on Scott Drive in Ringwood, New Jersey, Upland, last week, and I worked a guy simplex in central Long Island, but I heard him stronger as I got down the mountain instead of on the top of the mountain. As I descended down the mountain, his signal came right up.
I assumed you were talking to a base, so you're going mobile to mobile. Fantastic. Wow. I thought you could do some great things, and that's one for the history books, I'm sure. Okay, if you have any further comments or any information, this is John from Weimar TechNet, KC2WGB.
Yeah, I have a comment too about medicine too. We got I'm a type 2 diabetic, and type 2 diabetic, I gotta take metformin. So when there's a man, I really gotta stock up on metformin, or else I'll be dead in a month. You know. We have back to you.
I know exactly what you mean. I'm an insulin-dependent diabetic, and I do carry quite a stock of insulin because the pharmacies were closed, and there was no way to get it. Now, from what I understand, and remember this, if you go to your local police precinct and you issue an emergency that you must have that, you're a diabetic, blah, blah, they will find a pharmacy and even give you a ride to that pharmacy to get your insulin or whatever your medicine is. So just keep that in mind. KC2WGB.
Okay, yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. That's good news to me. And to you guys out there that need your medicine. Okay, thank you. Name is Joe, KC2QPEC, Yankee with you.
Okay, Joe, thanks for that input. I think I've covered everybody on the list. If there's anybody with a comment, otherwise I'm going to go to Paul for the space report. So one more call for any comment. KC2WGB, Landmark TechNet. My name is John.
CYZ comment?
CYZ comment, go.
Yeah, just another quick one on generators. They are conversion kits available. They are not that costly, where you can go from, say it, to propane, natural gas. There's like tri-fuels you can use on it, so you can convert whatever generators you do have.
Yes, we've been hearing about those conversion kits, and they're not too complicated. They seem to give you everything you need, the fuel bowl, whatever the valves are. Most people, I don't know if they'd be capable of making that, but I'm sure they could take it to any like lawnmower repair place and have that done and get that repaired. To have the choice of two different fuels is an advantage. If you can run propane and natural gas, something like that, that, you know, you get the more workarounds and the more choices you have, the better off you're going to be. Absolutely. KC2WGB. Anyone with further comment? Please come on now.
KQI unable to disconnect IRLP.
Comment.
Comment? Go ahead. This is KC2WGB. My name is John.
KD2AOC. Listen, if you're going to have long storage boots, such as MREs, don't bother. They're full of salt, which means you're going to have to drink that much more water, which is going to be a precious commodity at the time. Get yourself long-lasting food, not MREs, not full of salt. Over.
Yes, in fact, there's three companies I know from out west. I've seen their advertisements where they sell what appears to be the MREs, but they're actually beautiful little meals, and people are saying they are delicious, and they're not loaded with salt. I assume they're either freeze-dried or they're just, maybe they're irradiated, and people are very happy with them. A little pricey, a little more than MREs, but it is something to think about. Very good. KC2WGB. Okay, I think we've heard about from everyone. I'll take one more. I'll put out one more call to Vito in Bayshore. I know he was in before, and when I called him, he didn't come back, so maybe he's out there now. Vito, are you out there? This is KC2WGB, Landmark Pikeman. Okay, nothing heard. All right, well, W2SN. Pick it up, and hope you got a nice report for us. Let's see what's happening with NASA. Over to you, Paul.
Okay, very good, John. And they could be listening. Yeah, well, we need you back. And that's number one on the list. But just wanted to mention, John, you know, with all the things you're talking about, one of the things that I had, which is nice, is those wind-up radios, you know. I mean, people could have batteries, but eventually batteries might run out, you know. I mean, not during the storm. I was out for, 7 days, and then after that, no cable and TV and everything for another 7 days after that. Although, I had the over-the-air broadcast, so digital boxes really came in handy. At least able to watch, you know, regular TV, not the cable station. So, very good. NASA is still at it with dealing with private companies, and I mean they're really getting out of hand. The SpaceX has really got some big ideas. That's the company that set the Dragon spacecraft launched by their own Falcon 9 rocket up to the International Space Station 2 times now, and working on a 3rd time in another month or so. Now they have plans, now as well, he spoke at a European meeting, got Elon Musk, the head of SpaceX. What he wants to do now is, within about 15 to 18 years, he wants to start sending people to Mars with his rockets. He has plans. He thinks he could build enough rockets and have people pay $500,000 a ticket to go to Mars.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Within about 16 to 18 years, he'd like to start sending people to Mars. And he'd eventually like to send up to 80,000 people at $500,000 a ticket. So, John, I don't know. This guy, I mean, he's got good plans. I did hear about this Dragon. They call it the Red Dragon. He has had this out, you know, a year or so. Basically, what he wants to do is take 2 Falcon 9 launch rockets and bump to one Falcon 9 rocket, so it would be like 27 individual rockets, and he'd be able to have the capability of launching to Mars, which he would be able to, but to launch all these people and all the facilities, all the support equipment and the food and the water, talking about the water, what is it, 100 gallons per person, to Mars would be pretty tough. So now he's got plans, he has an answer for this stuff. He's going to take the facilities, land them on Mars before people ever get there, and have factories manufacturing oxygen and methane for fuel, and he's got big plans. Let me drop it. WS2M Space Report. And there's actually a system, a saboteur reactor system that's on board the space station, which actually can do this type of thing, can take the carbon dioxide on Mars, mix it with other chemicals, hydrogen, and create water out of it, create different fuels, and, you know, methane. And, you know, I mean, it's on such a small scale on a space station to do what he wants to do on Mars would be, I mean, he's talking about 16, 18 years out. I'm going to go more like 60 years out. I mean, I wish he could do it. I'm a big proponent of the space program, but he's got a lot of high hopes. That's one main topic. Another topic I want to bring up, let me drop it. I went up with an email. I know you get email all the time, John, but one fellow, Lewis W2ZEN, his call was, he sent me a story dealing with the Voyager spacecraft. So I thought I'd go over that, something I came across that I thought was pretty good. It's something called the magnetic highway. You know, Voyager 1 and 2, one is further out than number 2. These things were launched back in the late 70s, I think around 77. And they were launched like 16 days apart. Actually, Voyager 2 was launched before Voyager 1 because of some delays on the initial launch. But here these things are, maybe four times the distance of Pluto, out near the end of the known solar system. Let me drop it. The goal now is for these things to cross the into stellar space, and they'd like to know when this happens. And these are both functional spacecraft. They have the magnetometers still working. And they're taking these magnetic readings. That's what they're calling this thing, the magnetic highway. And that's what Lewis wrote me about. And never heard of that, really, that term before, but this came off of space.com. Found it on that, and they talk about where the influence of the sun ends and interstellar space picks up, and that's where this magnetic highway is. Once they see that the change in direction of the magnetic force in the area that they're going through changes, you know, around 180 degrees from where it is now, they'll know that Voyager 1 has actually entered into interstellar space. So, it will still transmit after that. I mean, it's going to transmit for at least another, you know, 10 or 15 more years. So, let me drop it. Ed Stone has been with this Voyager missions right from the beginning, from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And he said that he believes that this is really the last leg of our journey to interstellar space. And he guesses within a few months, or maybe a year or so, Voyager 1 will actually be considered to be the first human anything sent beyond the influence of our sun, known as the solar system. So, there you go. I mean, there's plenty of other information dealing with this. These two craft, of people that don't realize it, were the ones that first investigated the distant planets of Saturn and Uranus and Neptune. Let me drop it. And they continue on working. They run on RTGs, radio isotope generators. Still functioning. The uranium fuel on board is enough to last. Well, actually, the half-life will go on probably for another, you know, many thousand years. But the metals that convert the heat given off from the uranium to electricity will probably give out within about 10 or 15 years. That's why they think that's how much power that, how much longer they're going to last, these thermocouples that convert the heat to electricity, all connected in parallel series, developing enough power to power all the test equipment, and of course radio. Takes, let me just drop it, 17 hours to transmit back. Now, the speed of light, we all know that radio waves travel at that speed, 17 hours, one way. So you want the Voyager to do something, change its orientation in space or whatever, transmit up a message, take 17 hours to get there, another 17 hours it takes at the speed of light before you get a reply that says, okay, I've done what you've asked. That's pretty much it, John. A couple other things. You got a mission from Russia going up to the International Space Station to occur on the 19th of this month. There's three people on board now, three more going up. And NASA just gave an approval, and they have two people, one Russian, one American, that are going to be going up in 2015 to the space station. The first 1 year, minimum of 1 year approved mission. That's the first for the United States. Russians have done this kind of thing before, but first for the year approval by NASA. And the first guy actually doing it is going to be Scott Kelly. He's the brother of Mark Kelly. Mark Kelly is the one that was married to Gabby, the lady congresswoman that was shot in Arizona. So Scott and Mark are twins. And he'll be the first 1 year NASA full year on the International Space Station, starting in 2015. That's pretty much it. Let me drop it. Any questions or whatever, I'll be here, but that's pretty much it, John. We'll send it back to you, KC2WGB. This is WS2N Space Report TechNet. H2MU.
MU recognized. Paul, a couple of questions. You mentioned that little crank radio. Where did you purchase it? How many dollars? And what was your experience with it? When you crank it, approximately how long does it operate? Maybe you can give us a feeling on that. And I have some questions on the other things you mentioned. Back to you, Paul. KC2WGB, Landmark Checkman.
Mine is great. I don't know how many years I've had this thing. When it first came out, it's got to be, I'm going to guess, it's, I don't know, 18 years. I'm going to take a wild guess, but I don't know, a long time. Benjen, it's made from, where South Africa that come out of. I think they're now made in China, if the company's still going. Probably are. But Africa was a good place because at that time, 15, 20 years ago, batteries were hard to get in these out-of-the-way places in the middle of nowhere, Africa. And those people bought them up like they were candy. They were able to receive all the, any station that they wanted just by winding this thing up. It also has solar panel on board. So in the daytime, just put it out on the table. You crank this thing up. Let's say it's nighttime. Maybe you give me an idea. Nighttime, it'll run, 30, 35 minutes, maybe 40 minutes on a full crank. And it takes about 30 to 35 cranks to just crank the thing all the way up. But if it's sitting out in the sun, you crank it all the way up. It'll turn as it needs it. If a cloud comes by, the crank will start turning to supply the energy, John. And then if the sun comes out, the sun will take over again. So doing it that way, you could leave it out all day long if it's a sunny day. So how many dollars? Oh, I don't know, probably $80 or something. Let me drop it. They all still have them. I mean, it's different companies that put these things out, these wind-up radios. In fact, they make a small one. I think the ARRL is selling a very small one, but mine is like a boom box. I mean, I can put mine on a table and go, you know, 150 feet, 200 feet away, and I can still hear this thing. It is loud. It just does AM, FM, but it works good. Naturally, I had about four other radios, including a scanner, you know, for HF. I could listen to HF. And the first thing I did was, before the storm, of course, was charge all the batteries for the HD. So, you know, you got to have 2 meters. And as far as news goes, Limelight was the best. I don't know, I was up and down the bands, and you couldn't beat the information that was gotten off of Limelight. Channel 12 was very good. They simulcast also on a couple of stations on FM. They were a pretty good Channel 12 Long Island. Back to you, Dave, John, WS2N.
KC2, WGB, Limelight TechNet. Paul, you mentioned the Voyager. Okay, now I know, I believe it has already hit the heliopause. Did they have any idea of how much longer or the distance they're going to be able to hear this thing? I mean, the transmitter may run for another 10 years, but how much effort is going to be required to be able to listen to this device? It's really reaching the limit of technology right now. So maybe you've read something about that, when they expect to be able to, when the termination is going to come with communication. Even though it's transmitting, we may not be able to hear it. Back to you, Paul.
I'm going to go back 20 years ago. I mean, let's see, Carl Sagan died in 1996. It was before that. I remember him talking about it, and he thought you'd be able to hear this thing up to maybe 2012, 2015, or something like that. It's written in one of his books. But, you know, since then, the Deep Space Network has improved their receiving capability. And the Deep Space Network, you know, consists of Madrid, Spain, Goldstone, California, and Australia, I think, down by Canberra, the capital. They have, you know, now these things are set 120 degrees apart, you know, on the Earth. So something is always in view of the Deep Space Network. It gets retransmitted up to the Hedra satellite, whatever they pick up from these deep space flights, no matter where, you know, which one it is. It could be Cassini or the New Horizon that's going to Pluto. And it's retransmitted up to the Hedra satellites, which are in orbit around Earth, in geosynchronous orbit, and then sent back down to White Sands, New Mexico, as the main receiving station for the Hedra satellites. And then from there, it's sent to where it might need to go, Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Goddard Space Station, we drop it. So the receiving capabilities have been improved at these three sites. So, I mean, probably, I guess 10 years ago, I remember hearing that you'll be able to hear this no matter, you know, how far it gets. The thermocouples will probably quit before the hearing capabilities dropped off. And the latest I read, I think it was Ed Stone, he was in charge of this whole project at JPL, was around 2020, but now they're thinking around 2025. You might lose some capabilities. Well, you already lost some capabilities on Voyager, but you know, some of the other ones, not that they lost, they just stopped using them. Like they cut out the camera. They knew they didn't need the cameras anymore. So to save on power, and what they did is redirected everything. So they'll be able to transmit it. We'll probably hear this thing, my guess, until 2025. John, back to you. WS2.
Great info, Paul. Okay, you know, well, really missed Dick tonight because I'm sure he'd have a bunch of interesting questions. I do have one question. Has it ever been mentioned
knowing that. I mean, they probably would have talked about that years ago, but I never read anything about that. But yeah, that would be great. Send a series of relay crafts following these things, you know, for the next 40,000 years. That's what how long it's going to take before it gets to another star system. You could retransmit these things for the next 40,000 years. Just keep sending off spacecraft every 25 years. Have it linked. Great idea, John. But no, that's not going to happen. I thought you might ask about the long-term missions on the International Space Station. The goal of that is to learn a lot more about long-term flights. I mean, they're up there as it is for 5 to 6 months on a regular basis, but now they want to push it to a year. And the goal, of course, is to have them last even longer than that, because a flight to Mars will involve, you know, there, you know, 7 to 8 months there to get there, another year on surface, another 7 to 8 months back. So you're looking at, like, you know, overall a 3-year mission. So I mean, that's part of the interest in these really super long duration flights. Back to you there, John.
Yeah, Paul, some of the things I've been reading about, it's just amazing. Now, the Mars mission, what you had mentioned and alluded to previous, they were talking about sending these modules. One would be generating fuel, one would be collecting water in some way, processing, and other ones would be livable containers, sort of modular that they could stack together, so that when the crew gets there, they'll have a comfortable place to stay. Of course, there'll probably be a lot of assembly, like a Christmas package, but that sounds very doable, and they could send it years in advance, and I'm sure they would have communications monitoring how much fuel it was generating, how much water was being collected or manufactured. There's so many different things, and I know they're talking about the atmosphere of Mars is a little different than they thought, and there is more availability of elements that they need. Now, the, what is it, Curiosity that's wandering around up there? I know it seemed to, they seem to think that there was some carbon found. Have they located any evidence of previous water? Is there anything definite on that yet that you've read about? Back to you, Paul. KC2WGB, Landmark Jetman.
There's plenty of evidence of water, you know, just the way the rocks are laying. I mean, they know that. Phoenix spacecraft actually found frozen ice under the ground. That was the one that was landed up north, in the northern part of Mars. And Curiosity has taken they're moving on from where they are now. But they have run all the tests on all 10 pieces of scientific instruments on board, and they have just recently they took some sand from the surface and put it through the Chemin experiment and determined what kind of minerals were in there, and they found that it had perchlorate in it and some other minerals that have also been detected by Spirit and Opportunity. You know, that they know by the they have an alpha X-ray spectrometer on the arm of Curiosity, and they ran some tests on that, and they knew right away what it was. But they put this sand in the Chemin experiment that confirmed everything what it was. Then they took the same sand and put it into the SAM, that's called SAM. Sample analysis of on Mars. They put the same stuff in there, and they heat it, drop it, same sand up, and you know, vapors come off of it. And they have detectors inside this unit that figured out that it has carbon in it, and it has this and it has that in it. And one of the things it does have is water. I mean, there was water vapors that came off of this stuff. So there you go. I mean, that's actual 100% proof that water vapor locked in the sand. And also some oxygen came off. So they noticed oxygen that... All the stuff could be mined, not oxygen, water, and this and that. But, I mean, you know, the logistics and the money and the, everything that would be involved. It's doable, technically doable. Financially, you know, very costly. Now, this equipment has to go up, do all this stuff, and then you'd have to send a manned mission there and have the habitat waiting for you and the fuel and, you know, and the water. And all the stuff has to be there. Because to bring everything from Earth is just too expensive. And that's pretty much it, John. KC2WGB, WS2M.
Very good, Paul. Let me annoy you with one more question. Have they discovered any heavy metals, or have they noticed any diamonds? Because I know there was volcanic activity there on Mars. Some of them are huge. And I was just wondering, Cumberland Pipes, if they've made any discoveries on heavy metals or any of the elements similar that we value here. Back to you, Paul. KC2WGB.
Yeah, like that planet that they found that they think is the whole planet is like one big diamond. a couple of months ago, that was in the news. The big discovery is really going to become, let's see, maybe 3 or 4 months out. Whenever they get, or maybe longer, maybe 5 months out. When they get to Mount Sharp, you know, the foothills of that mountain. And that's where they landed, and that was their goal to get there. Right now they're in the outskirts of this, you know, where this mountain is. And they're basically running tests and making sure it works. Calibrating everything, and once they get to the foothills, they start looking at that, the side of the mountain, and it's outcropped there. It's just, you know, the deeper you go, you're going to know more about the past history of Mars, and all those rocks, they could spend years testing all that stuff, and that's where they're going to come up with, you know, what's really in these rocks, you know, what kind of metals, and what they're really going to find. They're looking for organics, you know, things to support life. That's where, you know, that's where the rubber's going to meet the road. When they get to that, those real foothills, those outcrops of Mount Sharp, 5-6 months from now. John?
Wow, I love this information. Very good. The next question is, do you know how many kilometers this thing has moved since its original landing, and is it basically going in a straight line to that mountain, or is it zigzagging, or I know it has to go around rocks and structures, the, you know, minor moves, but is it basically a straight line, and how many kilometers has it moved, if you know? KC2WGB.
Yeah, if you go on a curiosity site, they give you the odometer reading, and I think you're up to 1,500 feet or something like that, maybe more. So, I don't think it's gone a quarter of a mile yet. Maybe that's about it. And their first goal from their landing site is to this Glenlick, G-L-E-N, L-G. It's, I don't know, the word Glenn spelled